Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Jesus.
Jesus who?
Jesus Christ the Nazarene.
Oh, man. This is real. This is Jesus at the door.
Come on in, Jesus.
Come on in.
What are you doing here?
I wanna trade some stuff.
Oh, all right. What do you want to trade?
I want to take all those things that you are ashamed of, all those things that you regret, all those things that bring you sorrow when you remember them.
Oh, man. Jesus, should I prepare a guest room? Because this could take all night.
Jesus probably would say,
yeah,
this is going to take a while, but you have the rest of your life to recover. So how about we get started?
Great. Let's do it.
This, my friends, is an example of Jesus at the door. This is a moment that seems unrelated to physical fitness and training and health, but it actually is a root, a deep plant, deeply planted, a deeply planted root that, when addressed, can unlock those things that we talked about in the last episode of those ideas of having your mind, your body, and your spirit all in tandem, all in concert, so that you can go to your destination. Your fitness journey will be much more smooth and definitely more enjoyable if the root cause of whatever the pain and the regret, even if it's subconscious, is Jesus can heal it, go for it. I just thinking about the difference between knowing myself and knowing the things that were causing inner turmoil. Those were things that I put in the vault, right? I think especially, well, humans in general, but particularly men, what we do is something traumatic happens, something painful happens, something that is unresolved happens. We put it deep down in the vault of our heart and then don't ever address it again. And this might work in a previous generation, but I don't think it works anymore. Like the people, our grandparents' generation, okay, it was kind of standard. Then our parents were figuring some stuff out. And then now we're here, I'm here, and I have a daughter. So I'm saying to myself, I want to do all the good things that my parents did, that my grandparents did, that my relatives have done since day one. But then I don't want to bring any of that baggage with me into the future for baby girl. Well, how does that happen? Oh, I'll address it head on. And this was the blessing in disguise of going on a journey of losing 100 pounds. All right, hold that thought. I better do the intro. This is Dave Woods with You Versus You podcast, brought to you by the good people at Imago Dei Digital Ministry and recorded here in Pasadena at Music Mind Studios. Evan had pointed out that I'd been saying this wrong, and I just want to I want to bring the humility to the fore and say I had mistakenly had it plural. I was saying Music Minds. It's actually singular. Music Mind. Music Mind Studios. And due to Evan's graciousness, that was some good fraternal correction. And now I cannot continue embarrassing myself. So thank you, Evan. My hat, if I had one, is off to you. Okay. This is a little social experiment, a little mental exercise, a spiritual exercise across the board, tailor fit for anyone who's human. It's called Jesus at the Door. I recommend answering and letting him in because he'll bring light to the areas of setback, pain, and heartache that people might be paying hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to go to psychiatry for, or might be doing something destructive to cover up whatever the pain is. The reason why I put it in the front, especially in this episode, is so there's a moment of addressing the pain and the heartache and the regrets and the shame that might be a cause of lethargy, might be a cause of depression, it might be a cause of anxiety that would just be accepted. And then, you know, best case scenario, you say, this is what my struggle is. Oh, this is This has been in my family for years. That's the genetic trait that I inherited, is being depressed or being gloomy, of being, slow to act when in reality, well, I shouldn't say that way, when the spiritual reality might be the weight of those things that are on your heart and on your soul are dragging you down. It feels like a ball and chain that you just have with your emotions. If you go to psychiatry, the therapist might say, oh, let's address this stuff from the family. Let's address these hurts and these pains. I don't know what the method is. I'm not familiar with the exact strategy. The healing that happens from that is great. And that's most likely the reason why people go to psychiatry, is to address the knots and to address the hangups that are with them. And the only thing that I have an issue with that is it might not have an end in sight, right? If I were to make the analogy of personal training and going to a shrink, I'd say you'd end the personal training after you hit that goal. If I had lost 100 pounds with a trainer, I might say, well, I don't really need to do this anymore. I have the tools in my tool belt to handle this by myself. This has been real. This is a great journey. I'm there. I'm going to just go to the gym by myself. I'd apply that same logic to psychiatry. After the father wound has been addressed, after the mother wound has been addressed, after whatever form of rejection or trauma was addressed, I would say you can leave psychiatry and go forward, because you've been made strong, right? You've been made well. I'm not downplaying psychiatry or saying don't go to psychiatry, because I think there's a ton of things that you're not going to learn in school from that interaction that the professional knows about and how to address so that you can be well-rounded and fully functioning, right? The thing that I'm getting at is saying Jesus can address the issue immediately and then help you walk through it with his guidance. And then when you just simply trade that in, right, that's the whole whatever that traumatic memory is, if you give it to him, all of a sudden the weight just seems to dissipate. Oh, all of a sudden he points out what that thing was that triggered you that you had no idea. Maybe you thought you were hungry, maybe you thought you were tired, maybe you thought you'd just been stressed out. But when it became something personal and then an explosive outburst of something that was uncharacteristic, that's how you know that was the wound that just got touched with some salt, right? The whole thing with Jesus at the door, which is a great exercise to do, is to realize that Jesus is your friend. He's not here to bring judgment. He's not here to condemn you. It's actually to heal you. That's in the name. Like, it's in the very name of Jesus Christ, right? His last name isn't Christ, right? That's what he does. That's his position. It's the Savior. It is the healer. It is the anointed one. And him, if you can imagine praying, being like, you know God is out there somewhere, but he might not be nearby. If you hear a knock on the door, you're like, oh, who's this? There's someone who's visiting. There's someone who is friendly. There's a guest. Most likely it's someone who's friendly, right? Oh, who is it? Oh, Jesus is here. He's at the door. What do you do? This becomes a very personal encounter, right? Do you want to answer the door? Do you not want to answer the door? If you knew it wasn't a trick, it wasn't a deception, it wasn't a tactic to try and get something out of you, something that you don't want to give up, it becomes more of, oh, what if it's my friend knocking at the door? Oh, I know this person. Yeah, come on in. It's a joyous occasion. The moment becomes a practice in visualization. If you were in your house and everything's great and someone's at your door, you can open the door. If you decide to open the door, You know who it is, and you're welcoming the person in. In this moment, Jesus is wanting you to give all those heartaches, those pains, those memories of rejection, the trauma, the insecurity to him. When you do that, he replaces it with something else, something better. It's peace, right? Peace would be the cure to anxiety. It gives you liberation. All of a sudden, you don't have those hang-ups and thinking that your mind will go in 1,000 different directions on how whatever you're working on won't work out, because you'll have that security of knowing that you're safe. The best part of all of this, I think I said this before, is that it's free, absolutely free, no charge. So everyone has nothing to lose by giving Jesus whatever that memory is, whatever that thing, that baggage is. When that happens, the possibilities are endless in terms of the potential that you now have being able to surrender what those pains were. For me, I was addicted to porn at a very young age when I was introduced to pornography by some friends. We're all teenagers at one point. When I was a teenager and saw it, I said, "Whoa, this is intriguing. Wow, this is captivating." But then there's some things that go along with the territory. All of a sudden, I don't want to talk to adults about this, right? How many adults could I trust as a teenager to talk about the unknown when it's really personal, right? That became a seed that was planted and then started to bear, not the bad fruit, started to bear the bad fruit later in life, right? So if I'm imagining Jesus at the door, I would tell him that immediately. And I did. And that's actually the solve to that wound, that moment of destructive behavior and all those consequences that came along with it, was saying, "Oh, man, okay, Jesus, you paid the price for me. Here, I will gladly take this blank check that you're giving me in exchange for this addiction for freedom. Here it is." All of a sudden, it became something that wasn't as, well, one, it brought it to the light. And then two, it became something, a topic that when broached, I could talk about at length because I had now experienced that freedom. And, you know, it's something that did take time, but when it was pointed out and then given to him, it became, it got replaced with new habits and new ways of thinking and new ways of conducting myself. Another one would be the broken friendships and the heartache from rejection. So I'm not gonna say her name. I'm gonna say Jenny. Say Jenny from the block, right? When I was a teenager, I had a crush on this girl named Jenny. She didn't like me back as much as I liked. Well, I should say she liked me back, but not as much as I liked her. And then at the same time, there was another girl. We'll call her Sheila. I don't know too many Sheilas. I'm gonna say Sheila had a crush on me, but I didn't feel the same way that Sheila did for me. I didn't realize at the time, but this was the same thing that was going on in Jenny's life. I liked her. I wanted her to like me back. The feeling was not reciprocated. Sheila liked me. I didn't like her. She wanted to be reciprocated. And the part of baggage was being selfish and then taking advantage of the fact that I knew Sheila liked me, and I was just treating it as entertainment and covering up the hurt from Jenny not liking me, right? And that caused heartbreak on Sheila's end. Sorry, Sheila. I'm pretty sure, actually I know from firsthand experience, that hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, so I'm pretty sure Jenny doesn't ever want to talk to me again, or Sheila doesn't want to talk to me ever again. But most likely both. The whole point being, this was something that had caused a seed of insecurity and, melancholy and lack of confidence in being able to approach someone that I liked and then develop a relationship and then have healthy boundaries and not be overly anxious about what they thought, or am I gonna lose this, or I just gotta hold on to it tighter, right? That was the thing that got ironed out that I couldn't have possibly known as a young man, and which I now know as having had the years go by. It's one of those moments where now I'm even more grateful for Marianne, my girlfriend, because she didn't have that, well, I mean, she has her struggles, but didn't have that type of baggage of the things that I had seen and the relationships that didn't work out. And she has the tools, we both have the tools to go about it and address the issues as they come up and then put them away, right? New issues come up, we address it, right? And that is, one, it's healthy, and then two, it's very life-giving. And that is a moment that I don't think I would have known or appreciated until I let Jesus into it and said, well, how about you show me, what's your way for doing things? I tried my way, it's not working out. I don't think it gets any worse than this. This is that rock bottom moment, and then saying, now I'm open to correction. Now I'm open to other opinions. Let me go to Jesus first. Okay, here we go. Now we move forward. Oh, there was a multifaceted issue going on. It was corruption from porn addiction, and it was corruption from rejection, and then it was corruption from using people in such a way where they could just be discarded when I'm done and just move forward, right? It was addressing that, seeing where it first started, rooting it out, and then planting the seeds of life in there, the seeds of truth in there, the seeds of orientation to what is healthy. Before it was self-centered, now it's more altruistic, right? It's more mutually beneficial without any type of expectation. The last one is the chip on the shoulder, that type of wound, which comes from, one would be expectations of people that I held in high esteem, causing either betrayal or scandal, or finding out more about them that made me realize they should not be in a position of a role model in my heart, or on such a pedestal where the human condition must not ever affect them because they're legendary, right? This is also the moment of when people having said something that stuck, right? We'll call it a word curse, right? It was an insult or comment or a remark that hit the strings of my heart in such a way that I took it personally because there was half truth to it, but it hurt so much that I was not able to go beyond it or look at the 99 other things that would negate the one negative remark, right? This is that moment of, hey, Jesus, now that we're talking, what's one of those areas of a word curse or an insult or something that is what's one of those things that had hit and stuck even if I don't realize it? And when he addressed it and brought it up, came up like a memory of when my best friend made this comment in seventh grade that, it shut down the comeback. Like, I wanted to, normally if someone makes a comment, it becomes like this verbal joust, you make your little comeback, right? This was the thing that silenced it and then made me say, whoa, how long had you been thinking about this? Because the way that hurt when you said that makes me question our friendship. Whoa, right? In those moments, going through the exercise, Jesus at the door, and the memory coming up, just enter into it and say, okay, well, I don't believe that lie. And just for the record, something that happened in 1999, I'm over, because Jesus pointed it out. Jesus pointed it out, and I addressed it and was able to see the truth of it, not what the half-truth or the lie was, and then reject what that lie was, and then realize the identity of not being the thing that my buddy had said, right? So if I ever see you, Jeff, hit you right in the throat. No, I'm just kidding. I'm over it. But the whole thing was saying that there are certain hangups that all of us have, no matter what our age is. Most likely we have more of them the older we get if we don't address them. This might be something that impacts your fitness journey. This might be an obstacle. This might be something where you shoot yourself in the foot if you don't address it. And if you hit rock bottom, there's no other way but looking up, right? Doesn't get any lower than that. You have nothing to lose by bringing Jesus into it and addressing it with him. Like, this is, oh, you don't have to go to a certain place. You don't have to go to, you don't have to go on pilgrimage. You just talk, commune with yourself in your car, right? Talk with yourself as you go for a walk. And if you have, if you're confused about any of the things that I'm talking about, it'd be the moment you address this with Jesus, you call on his name and say, hey, what's something you want to heal? When all of a sudden you have a memory that you have not thought about in years that comes up, that's how you know it was God. That's how you know it was Jesus saying, oh, I want to touch that. I want to take that. I want to walk with you in it. So when you look at it again, it's not painful. I promise you, when you do this, and all of a sudden you have energy to go to the gym, you have energy to make a resolution and carry it out, when you reach that that goal that you had set, it's climbing up the mountain, and you reach it, and you did it with joy and with peace, and knowing you could probably do something like this for life, and you're not thinking about all the other things that could come your way, that is freedom. And that is something that will help you get up before your alarm clock when your alarm clock goes off at 4:30 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, whatever time you set up to, especially if you go train in the morning, right? You'll be able to beat that and say, I know I can conquer this. This is the outward, the external pressure pushing against me, but I know I can swim against the stream. It's if you were to be in the middle of the stream and you're already tired and you woke up in the middle of the water. I don't know, maybe your kayak capsized. You could say, oh, I know, I don't even have to think about it. I have the strength to get that kayak, get that piece of driftwood, get that boat, flip it back over, get back in and start pedaling against the stream, continue to paddle against the stream without saying, I'm done for, I'm gonna just go with the current. Try it for yourself, see what happens, leave a comment, like it, share it, get back to me, text it, email. We can talk about this later if you'd like to. Or actually, I want to follow up. I want to know if this has worked for you, what your experience with it is. And worst comes to worst, continue going to therapy. Worst comes to worst, keep talking to your friend groups and your social network, those tight 12 that you have for counsel and advice and for admonishment, and see how it goes. This is not a mutually exclusive technique. In my mind, it is primo. It's first. It is the highest way, and it's the freest, and it's the quickest to get over all those moments of hang up, over shame, over traumatic experiences that are common to mankind. Just go try it. Jesus at the door. If you want more, if you want to see a website on this, I'm pretty sure it's called jesusatthedoor.com, and it'll work wonders. You'll actually say, whoa, this is a miracle. All right. What now? Oh, I know. When I think about the hitting triple digits on a podcast, getting to episode 100, and then knowing I'm going to have to go to episode 200, and then forward, the first thing is saying, how do I get to 100? I think to myself, I ponder to myself, how could I upset an entire industry? I know, personal trainer. How can I put a personal trainer out of a job? And when the personal trainer says, hey, potential client, why didn't you go with my services? That person says, actually decided to go down the free route with Dave Woods' UVU podcast because he's doling out some gems right now. And I don't need this, right? I really hope I hear that one day, that someone who is, I don't know, training celebrities says, I lost the client. I lost, what's his name? I lost Chris Hemsworth. I lost Michael B. Jordan. I lost Sly Stallone because someone, most likely a family member, put him on to UVU, and now you're my nemesis, Dave Woods. I'd say, hey, man, all's fair in love and war. Let's do this. Competition is healthy. If you're good at what you do, you'll have others. And here we are, right? No reason to be mad. If you can't beat them, join them. All right. If I were speaking to someone who wanted, specifically, to someone who wanted to lose 100 pounds out of the gate without me knowing them, not knowing their backstory, not knowing the circumstances, not even knowing any of their injuries, what I would say to them is this. Give me one meal a day of what you're doing. Right? If you're eating 5 meals a day, 7 meals a day, there's no parameters around what you're eating, give me one of those meals and I'll tell you exactly what to do. It'll be focused all on your gut health, and it starts with overnight oats, a shot of turmeric, and a protein smoothie. Sounds very simple, right? Anyone can do that. Well, let's dissect that a little bit more. Some people, I don't know what this hypothetical person does with their oatmeal, or if they eat oatmeal, or if they eat so much oatmeal that it's coming out of their nose. I'd say make that transition from standard oatmeal, especially if it's microwavable instant oatmeal. Nah, throw that in the trash. Actually, give it to someone who's hungry. Don't throw it. Don't waste food. Find high quality oats. Most likely, typically it's rolled oats. The very clean oats with no other added things. It's purely oats, jumbo oats, right? Find that. Let me back up. Go to a place that makes overnight oats, just so you can be familiar with what you're about to ingest, and then make it at home. But first things first, let's make it as simple as possible. Start eating overnight oats. This is, I know it's trending, really trendy here in LA, but for very good reasons. And the number one reason, in my opinion, why it should be trending is the process of soaking oats strips it of the starch. And that's the ingredient that usually wreaks havoc on certain people, depending on your family background and what your genetic makeup is. If you are diabetic, you probably don't mess with oats too much. If you are, if you're constipated, there's a whole list of things where people would avoid oats, and it might be because of this reason that is taken out of it. Remove the starch, all of a sudden you have the intended goodness and benefits there, not the bad thing. If people are saying, oh, how can you make what's the word I'm looking for? I think I might need a sip of this tea to get my thoughts back. How can you make such a audacious claim? I'd say this. If you were to go to the Philippines, rice is a staple at every single meal. In the Philippines, they're like and not just because of their Filipino background. If you're in the Philippines, how many obese Filipinos do you see? Right? Same thing. Right? We'll be very specific with this. If we go to Ireland, and you have not someone who's Irish descent, but who lives in Ireland, how many morbidly obese Irish people do you see who are eating potatoes in, as a major staple to the diet? Right? It's not across the board. I'm sure there's overweight people in the Philippines. I'm sure there's overweight people in Ireland. But if there's a specific food that is staple, that is ingrained in the culture as something that they're eating, because that's the food that is easily found and easily acceptable, you have to ask yourself. You might have to re-examine the thoughts on a particular food. The whole thing is re-examining what we know about food. In this particular case, where I'm talking to someone who wants to lose 100 pounds, make one meal overnight oats. It will not spike your blood sugar. It'll keep you full very long, and you'll be surprised. You'll say, a little bit goes a very long way. I dare you to eat, especially if you go to a place that sells overnight oats, I dare you to eat two of them. Most likely, if you don't inhale it and you just slowly, at a moderate pace, I guess, eat both overnight oats, you'll probably be full for 24 hours, right? Maybe not 24 hours, but I don't think you'd be able to even finish it if you eat it slowly, right? That's the goodness of the oat expanding in your stomach and then giving you that feeling of satiation, of being satiated, of being full much longer. It also goes, it goes to your large intestine and then is almost like a, what do they call it? It's like a squeegee, right? Just goes through your system and it'll set you straight. Trust me. That alone is enough reason, but there's a ton of beneficial reasons to overnight oats, especially overnight oats over standard oatmeal, over instant oatmeal. Next thing, the turmeric shot. Turmeric is a wonderful ingredient that will, not only is it good for your brain, especially if you meet people who are like, oh man, I'm not good with names, I'm really good with faces. Yeah, turmeric boosts brain health. So your memory will go through the roof. Oh man, how did I recall that? Yeah, it's a diet strong in turmeric. Not only is it great for your brain, it's also great for your gut. Right? This will be, it's flavorful. It is, it's a different, adds a lot of zest to whatever you're eating. The shot, and probably has some other stuff like black pepper, cayenne, turmeric, maybe some ginger, right? Those are all things that will do wonders in your stomach. Okay, moving next, protein smoothie. I swear by this. This would be, most likely this would be enough if you just added this to your diet routine. But this is where you can get the veggies, you can get the fruits, you can get something that is long lasting and helps you stay full longer, and it also is delicious, right? My only caveat to this would be if you plan on doing cardio, especially in, if you're going to be doing some high intensity cardio, keep the veggies out of it because it builds up gas in your stomach and no one wants to be next to the person on the treadmill who's making a symphony, you know what I'm saying? So you add these three things together, overnight oats, a shot of turmeric, a protein smoothie, you will stay full, you'll have slow burning energy, and it'll work wonders, especially if you're a newbie, if you're beginning your fitness journey. To this person who wants to lose 100 pounds, doesn't know where to start, it's right here. We're going to put tight parameters around one meal, just one. Be as free, be as you don't have to count your calories. You do what you're doing right now, but one meal, try it for a week, see how you feel. I'm willing to bet you're going to see the difference in 1 week and then say, what else can I do? At that point, I'd say, start to learn how to make it yourself. We'll go one at a time. Learn how to make overnight oats, very easy. The biggest thing right here is making sure the oats are high quality, that'd be rolled oats, and then making sure that they're fully submerged so the starch is stripped out of it. From there, you can get funky. You can add chocolate. You can add cacao nibs. You can add honey. You can add maple syrup. You can add fruits, veggies, whatever you want. Right? Well, I don't recommend veggies for this one because it's a little heavy right there. But the whole thing is there are a combination of, there's endless combinations of what you can do to make this palatable. It's not that it's unpalatable, but there's things that you could say, oh, I know this is how I can add a brand new veggie or a brand new fruit or a brand new nut to this to make it different, to make it stand out, to make it something that I look forward to. And the beauty of overnight oats, especially if you're lactose intolerant, you can just do it with water. I don't like it just with water. I'd say almond milk, but you can do a non-dairy version, and it lasts just as long as the milk does. So imagine you have the expiration date, we'll say 7 to 10 days on the milk in the fridge. If you make it, especially on a Sunday night, it's good for a week. Right? The ease, the convenience is there. That is enough to start getting on that meal prep life. The one that I'm going to skip for now is the turmeric shot. I'm going to go to the protein shake. So with the protein smoothie, to buy a high quality protein powder, right? When you go to any of these supplement stores and there's this overwhelming abundance of protein options, ask them for the cleanest protein that has the least amount of fillers in it. There's at least three. There's a top three right there, right? The person who works there will point out most likely a veggie option or one that is dairy-based, like casein or whey. I try and keep it light with the dairy, except for when it comes to the protein. I always go with that whey, right? If you are lactose intolerant, use discretion. You might have to just go with the veggie option. If you are dairy sensitive, test how sensitive you are with the whey, all right? It's up to you, but the whole thing that I'm getting at is when you make it yourself, it'll be easier on the wallet. And then the next thing is it's not that hard to adjust to a lifestyle of making protein smoothies, protein shakes, all right? So from there, you could say, oh, you know what? I'm going to stop there because that's a whole lot to take in for someone who is brand new and wants to lose 100 pounds. One meal a day, that's going to be different than what you normally eat. And it's going to consist of overnight oats, a shot of turmeric, and a protein smoothie. Simple as you get, right? Hold that. All right. We're gonna be a little bit out of left field for a second. Did you know the word for soul in Greek is psyche? Let that sit. Let that percolate. When we're talking about psychiatry, when we're talking about matters of the heart, when we're going deep inside, you know, you're watching a show, you got all the feels. Yeah, it hits your soul. It resonates on your soul. It moves you. That's what we're talking about. I don't speak Greek, so I'm not going to go into the argument of how it's pronounced. I think it's psyche, but that's not the point. The point is noticing the difference between something from the soul and noticing something from the spirit. Right? I get the, from what I've seen, especially Western civilization, especially LA, that word seems to be interchangeable. Soul and spirit, same thing, when they couldn't be further apart. Right? With the soul, if the soul is driving the car, it's going to be more of the impulse the drive, the instinct to do something in a certain particular way that might have adverse effects later, but that's inconsequential because you said it. I'm gonna have to mention my boy Ye, Kanye, right now. This, in my opinion, is an example of someone who is ruled by his own soul, right? Doesn't want to listen to anything. He crowned himself God. I haven't listened to the new album yet. I don't know if I'm going to, because just hearing him speak, I'm like, oh no, please don't go off and do something wild, but let this album be a banger. Okay, I'm gonna have to accept that the Kanye that I once knew and loved is no longer the same Kanye that's in front of me. All right. The whole point as using him as an example, and one, if you know him, I'd love to have some overnight oats with him, have a protein shake and just talk life to see where his head's at, right? Just to see where he's coming from. The whole thing of me saying it in this way is all of us have a little Kanye in us. No, I'm just joking. That's a little levity right there. All of us have a moment if we realize what's the driving factor of anything we do, we might be able to say, oh, that was from my soul. I felt it from my soul. Oh, this felt right. If we look back, if we hold that thought and we look back on a decision that we made because we said that and are now, we're smarting for it, right? That was something that had left its mark from a lack of discretion or a lack of planning or a lack of introspection, and now it's here and we call it a life lesson. What if we could avoid that again in the future? Right? Most likely we would say, yes, I'm not going to do that again. Oh, my soul was driving that decision. Conversely, the spirit, right? Especially being friends with Jesus, you'd say, oh, I know the Holy Spirit. I know he gives the spirit of wisdom. I know there are certain things that were him moving and not me moving, because I know what I would normally do, right? In that level of weighing something, and the spirit comes and goes like the wind, right? If you are led by the spirit, it always turns to something good, and you can weigh the fruit of that action against what had happened that caused that inciting incident. Hope that wasn't convoluted. Hope that resonates. The whole point is, if you're able to discern between a movement of the soul and the movement of the spirit will always be something higher and outside yourself. It'll be a moment of inspiration that doesn't lead to a regret. Right, it doesn't lead to, oh, I don't know what I was thinking. Instead, you'd say, it's that moment where people say, oh, what's your muse? Right, this would be naming an outside force that overshadowed you and then caused you the inspiration to do something that was outside of yourself, that people are able to judge as good, and that you're able to judge as good. It's inconsequential whether other people think it's good or not. It's more of a long-lasting thing that you can only really see in hindsight after the seed has been planted, it's been watered in spirit, and then it bears fruit that you can measure, right? I guess I'm chuckling to myself because this is something that is hard to recognize in the moment, but after the fact, you say, whoa, all right, that was a gift that was given. I just opened it up, rolled with it, and now I'm here. The whole thing here is imagine yourself going from point A to point B and you're in a car. If your soul is driving, it might have deleterious effects. If you're able to realize which is driving, the spirit or the soul, you don't have to have such concern. If you're realizing it's the spirit, you move in spirit, it goes well, right? That's up for critique and analysis on a case-to-case basis. the whole thing is a person trying to lose 100 pounds and is new to the game, new to fitness, new to fighting against themselves. It'll take some soul searching to see what the cause was that led to this moment of you saying, I want to lose 100 pounds. And then it'll be something outside of yourself to push you and to continue to strive against the outside forces and all the obstacles that come your way so that you do lose 100 pounds. All right. My man, Evan, could you scroll down? Evan, scroll down to 7. All right. Perfect. Right there. Much appreciated. The specifics of this. Now you thought we were getting deep before, right? Now we're going even deeper. We're going that 3 levels deeper, inception status, right? The first rule that I would give, or the first thing to do, is eat right for your blood type. I swear by it. Look it up. You can Google search it and get the book and get the app. There's a free version, there's a paid version. I recommend getting the book so you can make a bunch of highlights that you can flip through this, that you keep it as a guide. And one could argue you could do the same thing on your phone. It's the whole point is that you familiarize yourself with this lifestyle diet of eating like how your ancestors ate. Most likely, if you eat like how your ancestry ate, you will be able to take all the pros, and when you drop the negatives, right? It's most likely something you didn't even know that was in your diet that was toxic to you. That's what's causing these allergies. That was causing bad sleep. That was causing acne. That was causing excess gas. Right? It was causing just a plethora of problems. If you found out it was because it was a certain food group that you were eating regularly, and then you eat according to that blood type and it goes away, that's the win. That's the win right there. This is the thing that I did, and it projected me so far. I'd say as propulsion, it moved me forward in gaining momentum to continue to lose weight, to maintain weight, or to especially after I hit that goal, to keep going from there. This is what I'd say out of the gate for saying this person who wants to lose 100 pounds, where do you start? It starts with familiarizing yourself with your own genetic makeup. Find out what your blood type is. Get this book, Eat Right for Your Blood Type. Follow those, see what works, and then what doesn't work, you can discard. Commit to that, though. Commit to it for, I'll always say 6 weeks, but then imagine doing it for 4 months. Right, you're going to stick to a specific style of eating for 4 months, especially if you're beginning, and then see how it goes. The next is, because I don't know what this person looks like, they just want to lose 100 pounds, I'd say, how much do they weigh? Without knowing, they'll either be able to walk it off, start walking it off, or if they can't walk, to start swimming. Within those, whatever the limit is, especially if the person's 300 pounds plus, I'd say, what's their age? And then how much pain do they have when they walk? If there's pain, if there's arthritic problems, if there's multiple injuries, multiple surgeries, whatever it would be, that impact their ability to walk, hop in the pool. That is the easiest thing to do, to start burning calories and then get that mobility back, to start shredding the weight. And the hardest part here actually is being consistent with getting in the pool. And I don't want to dissect how many different obstacles there could be for that. I'll just say, go to your local gym, go to the beach if you're near the beach, go to a lake, go to whatever body of water is easily accessible and that you can do consistently. Start adjusting your life. 24 hours in a day. If you have 24 hours in a day, One of those hours can be dedicated to being in the pool and moving around. Go from there. Try it for 6 weeks. It might just be walking in the pool. If you don't know how to swim, definitely be safe right there. You know, let's not be overzealous. Be smart when it comes to getting in the water. There are going to be some limitations if you don't know how to swim, but this might be the moment where if you don't know how to swim, this would be saying the key to getting into walking shape will be learning how to swim and then pushing myself to swim for a mile. I'm going to swim for a mile. That right there has more than enough work cut out for you. When you're able to, when you've learned how to swim and you can now push yourself in the water, try and start timing how fast it takes you to do a mile. If you can't do a mile in the pool, say a half mile, or we'll even back it up. Swim a quarter mile laps. If you can't do that, just say, how long can I swim for now that I know how to swim? And then build up. If you're able to get to a pool 3 times a week, this is gold. If you're now in the habit and you have a newfound love of swimming when you didn't know how to swim before and now you're getting there, this will be more natural, right? If it's not natural, I put this as a challenge to you to say, learn how to swim or be a regular in the swimming pool until you're able to walk, until you're able to walk for 10 minutes, until you're able to walk for 10 minutes without pain, right? Then go from there. The next step would be saying, learn how to lift weights. If you have absolutely no idea about lifting weights, I'm sure you have a friend who does. If you have a friend who can teach you and be your buddy at the gym, whether it be at a facility or at their house, or if it's even just in the park with whatever you got, make sure they know that you're a beginner and to go easy on them. This might be the make or break moment. Is your friend able to teach you? And does it fit your temperament? Or how willing are you to be mirroring and the ipso facto an apprentice to this person who is really familiar with the gym and lifting weights? From there, that's really up to you, whether you want to be with this person or hire a personal trainer or do it the hard way, which is researching and YouTubing how to lift weights. There's a ton of apps for this, and they show you how to do the exercises and bring you through the range of motion. My recommendation is go with a person first, whether it be family, friend, personal trainer. There's the cost for, you have to pay for it, of course, if you get a personal trainer. But then learn the exercises, just the basic ones, push, pull, carry, right? And then do that for 6 weeks. What are you able to do at home? What can you do at the gym? Find that, be a regular, make that your thing that you do 1 hour a day or 3 times a week for 1 hour. And if you want to start really small, it would say, don't imagine what the weight could be. Go the lightest weight possible where you actually have the resistance and you have to strain just a moment, right? Just for that set. And then do that consistently for 6 weeks. When you know the exercise, you know the exercises, I should say, and then you're increasing the weight, you might find a new love for it. That'll be the thing that's burning so many calories. You'll say, why didn't I do this sooner, right? Go from there. If you are now familiar with exercises, that's when I'd say get the app or see what other exercises you can do that are variants of that but aren't a foreign concept, right? Learn those, be familiar, make sure you have the not only just good form but the range of motion needed, and then then increase the weight, increase the frequency. All right? The next thing would be sleeping habits. This is probably the unsung hero of a fitness journey, and it's having consistent sleep and recovery. If you, no matter where you're coming from for losing 100 pounds, I could probably make a blanket statement and say, find consistent sleep. I'd mark off 7 hours, 8 hours, 9 hours, especially if you're pushing yourself for the first time and you're eating for your blood type, you're swimming and walking and you're lifting weights. All of a sudden, you're going to be best friends with your bed and your rest time will be sacred. It'll become sacred. You will not be getting interrupted for anything. And all of a sudden, it'll be a moment where you don't want to stay out too late anymore because it's just so physically demanding. You'd prefer to be in bed. And it feels good to wake up well-rested and not need caffeine or a pre-workout, right? This type of thing is definitely underrated. across the board, I'm willing to bet most Americans do not get enough sleep. And then if they are working out, the quality of their sleep might not be something they take into consideration, when this could be the thing that completely changes even how you view things when you wake up in the morning, right? Find that consistency with your sleep and mark off. Definitely mark off when you're gonna go to sleep. If you go about it in a willy-nilly manner, I'm gonna go to bed whenever I want and I'm getting up at 3:30 in the morning to work out, you're setting yourself up for failure. Whatever that standard is for sleep, we'll say you go to bed at 11 p.m. Adjust that sleeping schedule to be 10 p.m. You're going to bed at 10 p.m. now, and you're waking up at 7 a.m. Adjust it there. Try that. And then from there, try and go to bed earlier and sleep longer. So we'll start the first couple weeks, going to bed at 10, and then try and be in bed at 9 p.m. so that you can wake up at 7 a.m. That little adjustment will work wonders in the long run, but I must warn you, it's hard at first. If you can adjust that, you'll see what is the make or break for that consistency. In my world, it's the weekend. It's always the weekend. People want to, and for good reasons, want to stay out later and then push on Saturday and then slightly recover on Sunday, start it over again. What I found was if I treat Saturday like Thursday, I am much better prepared for Sunday. And Sunday is standard. That's a recovery day for me in all areas of life. You know, take that day of rest, set your mind straight, be prepared for the week, and go from there. When you immediately just think about this, I see at least 30 objections to adjusting the bedtime. And I'd say, how badly do you want to make the change? A sleeping habit seems to be something that most adults don't take into consideration because it's already set in a certain way, or it's the other end of the spectrum where it's inconsistent. In a moment of saying, I'm going to drop 100 pounds, there are things that need to be looked at and need to be examined and then reassessed and then applied. This right here is, I'd argue, this is just as important of sticking to eating right for your blood type and your diet than it is to the actual exertion from the swimming and the walking. Try it for yourself, see what happens, and enjoy. If you're not able to commit to a regular sleeping pattern and routine, start incorporating naps. My vote would be decrease your caffeine intake and your alcohol consumption, because those are two things that severely impact your deep sleep, you know, that REM, that rapid eye motion sleep. And then when you've made that adjustment, it's much easier to be consistent with your sleep. I don't know what it is for most people. I don't know what it is for this hypothetical person who wants to lose 100 pounds. But if I'm speaking to you, you're going to have to examine caffeine intake, alcohol consumption, and then the consistency with your sleep. When you take those three things into consideration, you might feel like a new person even by week two, right? That alone is worth weighing the pros and cons and seeing if you can adjust it to how you live your life. All right, this one is this is a real challenge, but if you made it this far into the episode, I think you're up for a challenge. The question you should ask yourself is, where does your stress come from? What is the thing that causes you the most anxiety and worry and deflates your motivation? It takes the wind out of your sails. It's the thing that feels like it pulls the rug out from underneath you the second you start to think about it and mull it over. Finding out what that is and then redirecting your focus to eating right, to swimming and walking, to lifting weights, and to sleeping falls in line the moment you're able to target it. I think that most people who have not learned how to navigate seeing where their stress comes from might find that they get hung up on something, that they get fixated on something, and then their happiness goes out the window, their peace left hours ago, and they're not able to see the forest for the trees. If you bring Jesus into it and see what the root causes is, you're able to address it, heal from it, and then be free. But then another thing is to say, if you're able to recognize when it pops up, it's sort of like whack-a-mole, right? I don't know. Is Chuck E. Cheese still in business? I don't even know if Chuck E. Cheese is still. The game whack-a-mole, where you're smacking the mole on the head with the hammer, with the mallet, is just like one of those, the instigator of stress. If you're able to recognize that it is an instigator, something to be to provoke you to lose your joy, your peace, your serenity, and you hit it with the mallet, you can anticipate what it's going to be. There's never new moles that come out of nowhere, and you're like, oh no, there's a double grid. No. I feel like there's 12. There's 12 holes. And I have to just Google search the game whack-a-mole. The whole point of this analogy is there's a set amount of moles that pop out of the hole that you can smack, right? Though you could label each one of those moles a certain trigger, a certain memory, a certain thought, something that is invading your mind space and your heart space. If you've had them all labeled, you'll be able to recognize when they pop up and how they pop up, and then smack it with the mallet. If you do that, you'll find yourself not stressed out. You have to know your enemy to defeat your enemy, right? Have them all labeled, get out a piece of paper, whip out your cell phone, get a dry erase board, whatever it is, however you write it down. See what those areas of contention are that are attempts at stealing your peace. Be aware of them, and then go from there. I kid you not, if you say, oh man, I really get ticked off in LA traffic, that's the first thing to realize. Say, LA traffic ticks me off. When you get in your car, if you're aware that LA traffic is a thing that gets under your skin, half of the pressure is gone. Like, oh, I'm bound to get caught off today. Someone's bound to be jaywalking against, you know, the 405. Why are you on a highway, bro? The whole thing here is saying, when you're aware of the surrounding and the thing that would set you off, it decreases your likelihood of getting set off. If you know you're bound to get you're bound to have someone cut you off, if you anticipate it, it's not bothering. It doesn't bother you, right? It's the moment when you're like, actually, I'm late to this thing I got to get to. I'm late to work. I'm late to this family thing. I'm late to this celebration. I'm late to the gym. If you say that and then also say, I have a feeling someone's going to cut me off because this is LA, it won't bother you. Try it for yourself. See what you think. Leave a comment, especially on the social media platforms of UVU. Comment there, right? That's the win-win. If you have that on the back burner as something that would be a thief of your joy, all of a sudden you're prepared for it, and it's not hard when your buttons are pushed. You'll actually find that the level of patience that you have, let's say you have, we'll make the analogy of the fuse, right? You know, my fuse has been set. You'll see that the fuse to the powder keg has actually become much longer. And in that moment of it being longer, you grew in patience. Look at that, right? Just to clarify, more patience went up, not you've become impatient. You've grown in the virtue of patience. If you have more patience, you have more calm, you have more serenity, you have more hope, more joy, goes across the board on the bonuses and the pros of this. The whole thing is not being aware of this might always say you have a short fuse. Everyone who's here who wants self-improvement, or I should say self-development, everyone who wants to develop the self, if that increases, everything else increases in the positive. Go for it. Try it. Let me know if it works. The next thing that might be impacting you is saying, why are you on this fitness journey? You want to lose 100 pounds? Why? What's the reason? If you've gotten to the point where you see that that's the target, it is a common misconception to just want the desire for 100 pounds. Do you want to have that desire to lose that 100 pounds without having a reason why you're doing it? The doctor said I need to lose 100 pounds. Well, that is a real reason, but is that the one that resonates with you? Is that the thing that's going to get you out of bed to start training before you go to work? Most likely it'll only work as long as a New Year's resolution works, right? The whole thing is finding your why. I've harped on this before. I'll harp again. I'll harp until the cows come home. I'll harp until I'm blue in the face. All right. The finding your why is, it might be the gold standard for consistency. It might be the underlying theme of those who are successful, and then the factor that breaks someone who has incredible passion to do it, but then it just never seems to materialize. Find your why, and I'd even posit you should find three reasons, and not just three reasons, but three reasons that are bigger than yourself. Find what draws you out of yourself to continue doing something that is inherently difficult. Find three reasons for doing it that when you start to think about the benefits of that why, you're motivated to go to the gym. If you can find a reason that is beyond, oh, because I want to look good, because I want to have self-confidence, someone told me to, which are all valid reasons, by the way, if you find a deep motivator that requires you to move, hold on to those. Write that down, mull it over, review it, tell a friend, put it on social media, all that stuff. The whole thing is repeating it to yourself when you don't feel like going to the gym. When it seems like all of those things in life are building up and those reasons now seem foolish, and then you can address it a year later. When you have those reasons that are beyond the external pressures and life circumstances, that's going to be the premium fuel in your gas tank. The hardest part is just finding what those reasons are. When you have those, it'll make your excuse paper thin, and you'll be able to just see it as something that is probably just a daily distraction to keep you in stasis, to keep you in this, getting the same results over and over again. If that doesn't help, I'd recommend finding whatever sports movie it is that gets the fire going and say, if that were me and I was training like that, or if I was on that team and I wanted the pennant, that cup, that trophy, gold medal, the first place, would it be worth getting it if I just showed up at the end and having it was just given to me? It's a rhetorical question. Of course not. You have to put in the work. You have to push beyond yourself. You have to fight for this. This is the moment where when you have three reasons that are bigger than yourself, it no longer becomes a daunting task. You can do it. 100 pounds is hard, but the real thing is getting started and then keeping it off. If you have those three reasons and you review those every single day, and it's not even a long task to do. I mean, I say this every now and again. 2 minutes and 13 seconds in the car or before I start working out is a refresher, a daily refresher for my reasons that are bigger than myself to keep going to the gym. The next tip that I would give to you is keep the end in mind. And I don't mean the finish line. I mean the ultimate finish line. One day it's going to be your last. One day there's not going to be a tomorrow. If you're able to take that in and keep it in balance, in a healthy balance, as a sobering thought that one day you are going to die. That's the one. Spoiler alert if you didn't know this. If you don't know the day you're going to die, it doesn't become something that you're paranoid about. It's more an acceptance of your own humanity. And now you have from right here in this moment, whatever minute marker we are on this podcast, you would say, I can train and I can do what I can do for 24 hours. That's it. Right? Take one day at a time. What can I do to push myself to propel me towards my fitness goals just in these 24 hours. Go from there. For the person who might be having a health crisis and the doctor said, you have to lose 100 pounds or you're going to die, or you have to lose 100 pounds before we can even begin to start the medical procedure, that's where the rubber hits the road for saying, this is a wake-up call to get in shape. I don't know where to start. I'm glad I have this podcast to give me some pointers and some advice, and I know I have to apply that to my life. Right here is that person in mind saying, 24 hours, what can you do? What you can do is start watching what you eat, and not just watching what you eat, but have parameters around what you eat by looking at what your blood type is and eating for your blood type. And then here's one thing you can do. Overnight oats, a turmeric shot, and a protein smoothie. One meal, right? Educate yourself on, I should say, re-educate yourself on eating habits. This is all laid out in the book for Eat Right for Your Blood Type. All the guesswork is gone. You find the meals that you like within those parameters, and then have four meals a day, right? It is a total overhaul, but it's not overwhelming. If the parameters are set, and you know the ingredients to avoid, you are in the right direction when whatever led up to this point was putting you on the path that you're walking now. Regretting is going to get you nowhere. What will get you somewhere is adjusting these habits and replacing them with better habits. If you adjust the diet, you adjust the lifestyle, you will quickly go into the sliding continuum of health will go back into the positive. This was off the deep end, right? If this is the continuum of now you're at rock bottom, bad health, you start eating right for your blood type and having those parameters, the continuum starts to slide up into the positive, right? I always forget, is it the red or the black when it's talking about economics? You want to go in the black. I feel like just, you know what? I'm going to let that analogy go. The whole point is to bring it up into the positive is much easier. I'd say it's hard at first, but then when it starts to slide into the positive, it's easier to maintain. And then the curve starts to go up for excellent health, right? But the first step is getting away from rock bottom. 24 hours later, what can you do in that next day? Move from there. Next day, up. Right here, if you adjust the way that you eat and you have the borders set around what you can eat, you're taking a step in the right direction. If you're swimming consistently, learning how to swim, walking in the water, walking without pain for 10 minutes after a meal, you have a step in the right direction. If you're starting to familiarize yourself with weighted resistance, even if it's light, even if it's just 5 pounds, even if it's just 2.5 pounds, you're making a step in the right direction. If you're watching how you sleep and you're seeing what impacts your sleep, maybe you don't sleep well because you have too much caffeine, adjust the caffeine levels, you're gonna sleep better. Oh, you're not sleeping well because you're drinking alcohol before you go to bed or throughout, we'll even say in the afternoon to the nighttime, and that's throwing off your sleep. You can adjust your alcohol intake. If you find that you can't sleep because you are fixated on your stressors and all your problems, you can redirect your focus to the good things, right? From there, it'll impact your sleeping habits. Now, when you've gotten in that pattern of doing it, you're taking a step in the right direction. You have your why. Why are you doing this? It's bigger than yourself. You're taking a step in the right direction. If you're keeping the end in mind that one day you're going to die, I have to repeat it. So just say it with me. One day I'm going to die. One day I'm going to die. If you know that and you've accepted it, it's no longer this thing to be feared. Matter of fact, it's just something to take in that this is part of life and that's the journey. If this is a moment from going from the immaturity of that realization to accepting, and that's the maturity, going from immaturity to maturity, congratulations. You might have just found your peace. That'll help you sleep well at night. The last thing in this regard is to say, what will happen when you're tested? Life has a great way of testing you to see what you're made of, testing your mettle, testing your grit, your determination, your power to overcome. It's gonna happen. You get cut off in traffic, your patience just got tested. If you're now aware that you're gonna get cut off in traffic, well, it seems like you passed the test when, you know, you don't wave your finger at the person, let them know that they're number one, right? You passed the test. If the person cuts you off and has some comments for you and you're not moved, oh, you passed the test. If you give them the same amount of pushback, you failed the test. If it causes you to zigzag between traffic to find the person because you're just blinded by rage, you failed the test, right? That's what I mean by being tested. The whole thing that I'm getting at is push will come to shove in any direction, and worst case scenarios seems to happen all at once in every area of life. That's the moment where it's pass or fail, stand or fall, sink or swim. Wouldn't it be great if all of these tests happen to you and you pass with flying colors, right? Wouldn't it be great that you embarked on this 100-pound journey, and then the day you hit 100 pounds down on the scale and you're fast asleep and you can't wait to go to the gym at 6 in the morning the next day, imagine it's 3 in the morning and someone breaks in your house. What if you woke up and you fought that person off and you weren't even out of breath because you had just gotten into shape for however long it took you. You passed the test. You defended your house with your bare hands. The person's definitely not coming back in your house because you beat them up and sent them packing, right? Wouldn't that be phenomenal? Could you imagine? Imagine you had never lifted weights in your life, and the gains that you had made caused you to be more, not necessarily physically imposing, but you became just stronger, and you have no training in martial arts, and someone broke into your house. It's inconsequential on what their size difference is, and you fought back for the first time in your life, and they ran because the moment that, this is actually the thing with burglars, people breaking the houses, they don't want to have a confrontation. They're here to quickly get some of your items and leave without any type of interaction. That's actually the reason why people would watch your house, so they know your schedule, so they don't run into you, right? If someone breaks into your house at night and you confront them, most likely it's to do a smash and grab and then be gone. But the thing that I'm getting at, you don't have to unravel this too much, is picture yourself in a scenario where you're fast asleep, someone breaks in your house, and you oppose them, and they get out of there. Wouldn't that be a real confidence booster? Like, knowing that you could, right? So, a little bit of a tangential comment, and I don't recommend this movie for most people. The movie Eastern Promises, my man, Viggo Mortensen, he gets caught in the worst case scenario for being attacked. He's in a Russian bathhouse, and he's only wearing a towel, right? So this movie's not PG-13 rated. It's rated R, so for any high school student or anyone who's younger, parental discretion advised. This is a moment where he's tested, and it's pretty gritty, it's pretty gruesome. He defeats these two guys that specifically came in to murder him. Right. And the thing that's really trippy about this is they're fully clothed, right? Imagine in the shower, right? Slippery tiles, not wearing chanclas. People come in wearing street shoes and a knife. That is the worst case scenario. Actually, I can think of about five that are very similar. But the whole point of this is my man Viggo overcame, and granted, he was not unscathed. This is also a very realistic fight of what it would look like. So that's why I say definitely viewer discretion advised. But you went on this fitness journey. You get attacked in a Russian bathhouse. It would be awesome to overcome, right? Two henchmen of the Russian mafia, right? Send them packing. All right. We are getting close to time, but I want to just wrap up with saying the person who wants to lose 100 pounds, you're going to have to go to war with yourself. This is the whole raison d'etre for naming this podcast You Versus You, because at the beginning, the middle, end of the day, the person that you is causing your biggest opposition is yourself. When you're able to see there's an old way of doing things, and then there's the desire to lose 100 pounds, that resistance is 99% internal. If you're able to see that the old way of doing things was not working and you need to make some new habits in order to drop 100 pounds, the resistance is going to come from all different areas. But if you establish a new person by saying, this is now how I eat, I don't eat like that anymore, you're able to fight against yourself. If you say, this is how I used to sleep, I didn't set an alarm clock, I hate alarm clocks, I get up when I get up naturally or when I have to because of work, that's going against your old self. You now have a pattern of going to bed, waking up, and that's now set in stone. It's now you versus yourself. If you had a way of, let's say you didn't have a way of lifting weights because you're unfamiliar with the gym, if you didn't know how to swim and now you're learning how to swim, if you didn't really walk because you drove everywhere or took the escalator, took the elevator all the time, And now you're taking the stairs, you're taking the long route, you're parking in the back of the parking lot, or at least further away than the other cars, and are using that as time to get your steps up, you're now fighting against your old version of yourself. Where do you want to go is really up to you. How you do it is really up to you. The fact of the matter is, the old way is the old version of yourself. It's the easygoing, no limits, reckless lifestyle. If you're able to call a spade and say, I was reckless, I now have parameters, that is the new version you're setting up, and that new version will hit that goal of 100 pounds down. Go to war with yourself, and the bonus hack out of all of this is to say, a community is a blessing. A friend is a gift. At the end of the day, the only friend you'll always have is yourself. The only friend you'll ever have who's constantly there is yourself. Reshape yourself until you're best friends with yourself. That is the best version of yourself possibly. Despite where you're at currently in your fitness walk, your fitness swim, your fitness life, your fitness journey, reshape your old self until you're at peace with your old self. And then it'll almost be like you have a twin, right? Instead of this thing that was relegated to the shadows or was just so far behind you that you can't see them. You ran a marathon away from them. You ran an Iditarod away from them. That old version is like a killer in an 80s slasher movie. The person's just walking, but always catches up to you, right? That's the metaphor of your old version. If you unmask the Jason mask and you see that it's you, whoa, you better become friends with yourself, right? This is that moment in Empire Strikes Back, right? Where Luke goes into the cave and Master Yoda says, you don't need your lightsaber. And he decides to bring a lightsaber with him. And it's a good thing that he did because Darth Vader was waiting for him. And they have this duel and Luke just swings at him and decapitates him, right? Bad guy down. He looks in to the mask and it's him underneath the hood of Darth Vader. That right there is the scene that confused me as a kid, but then started to resonate as I got older. Luke Skywalker's worst fear was that he'd become his father. Like I was telling my man Evan, that the books are now non-canonical, and they're not ever going to show how Luke Skywalker broke bad and became an evil dude. This is a thing to address, to one, fix all the inconsistencies and lack of hitting the mark in these new Star Wars. I shouldn't say across the board. In the Skywalker saga, we'll just leave it there. If Luke had accepted that he is not his father, and he is not the sum total of his father's failures, and that he was his own man, he has a legacy that's not great, but he can turn it, that would have been the moment of accepting that he can beat his father, and he doesn't have to become him. This is the same thing right here. That version of yourself that's way in the past, if you want to level up, become friends with that version, well, I should say, get to know the things that made that person tick, that version of yourself tick, accept it, understand it, and then befriend it, teach it, mold it, help that version of yourself to mature to where you're at now, and now you're unstoppable. Reshape yourself until you're best friends with yourself. If you have one friend, that's a gift. If you have a community of people who are working on their fitness too, that's a blessing. Take that aside. Maybe it's just you. Become best friends with yourself. The last thing, and we'll end it, because this is going to be a long one if I don't. Healing, cleansing of the past, overcoming rejection is like Red Bull. It gives you wings. Did I say that singularly? It gives you wings. You get the analogy. Imagine me flapping my wings out of here, right? All right. That's it for now. If you want to do... Actually, it's my choice. We're going to go with a bullet round of the 7 points. The person who wants to lose 100 pounds, you're going to have to, one, eat right for your blood type. Put those parameters up. Swim and or walk. Make that a habit. Start lifting weights. Do a little R&D. Get a friend. Learn. Correct those sleeping habits. Address the stressors. Redirect your focus. The next is go to war with yourself. The next is become best friends with the old version of yourself. Accept, understand, and then move forward through development. The last step that we just talked about is healing, cleansing of the past, overcome rejection. It's just like Red Bull. It'll give you wings. All right, this is your man, Dave Woods. Another episode of You Versus You. Those are the keys to my success. I give them to you. I can't unlock the door and walk through it with you. You got to do it yourself. I'll see you on the other side. Thank you.